Chapter 24. Elith's heart frosted. She hadn't had much hope, really. But if she had meant to suffer defeat, she wished that they had done so back at the compound, instead of here, now when escape had almost dared to seem possible.
"I don't guess that was part of the plan," Eth Amuin said.
Elith didn't acknowledge him.
"Hawk," she said into her communicator. "Hawk, are you all right?"
Seconds ticked by with nothing but silence from the other end.
"Hawk!"
Still nothing. Eth Amuin stepped closer to her, his face serious beneath a mask of dirt and char traced with flecks of blood. Gone was his giddy delight at the escape, replaced by the somber reality of their situation and concern for their mutual friend.
"Hawk, tell me you're out there," she said.
"Yeah, Elia,"
Hawk said finally.
"Yeah, we're all fine. Little scraped up, no big deal. You make it?"
"Sort of," she said. "Where are you now?"
"Running over the top of the mountain. We peeled off when we saw the ship coming and we're putting some distance between us and them just in case."
"They got our ship, Hawk," she said. There was a pause.
"You need us to come get you?"
he said a moment later.
"No, it's fine. You go on and get clear. There might be more of them still running around out here. No point in risking it."
"You sure?"
"I'm sure."
"Okay," he said. "Stay on comms."
"Will do. Thanks, Hawk. And thank your crew for me.
You did it. You got him out."
"All right," he answered. "But don't make it a goodbye just yet."
"Okay,"
Elith said. "We'll find you later if we can."
"When you can," Hawk said.
She signed off and looked back at Eth Amuin then, processing.
"He doesn't know,"
he asked. Elith shook her head.
"I just told them if we got you out, they'd have to leave the mountain," she said. "Thought I'd save the hard conversation for when we were all back on the ship."
Eth Amuin nodded.
"Some truths are better left unspoken," he said.
"His end will come swiftly, unlooked for,
like a man gone in his sleep. A gentler death than ours, at least."
"More sudden, maybe," Elith said. "Don't know about gentle." She turned and walked away from the burning gully, back up the slope through the trees, back to the clearing they'd passed.
"You came back," Eth Amuin said, following behind her.
"You were right," she answered over her shoulder.
"I was?"
"Yeah," she said. "I wanted to punch that guy." She reached the clearing and walked out into it. She didn't know what would become of the sky once the contingency began, but she wanted to look up into it, to see clearly whatever it was that doom looked like.
"Think they'll send that other ship after us?" she asked, glancing back at Eth Amuin.
Eth Amuin sat down behind her by the edge of the clearing and leaned back against a tree. He stretched his legs out in front of him, ankles crossed, just as he had a couple of days before when she'd first taken him from the compound. Barely 2 days ago. A lifetime ago. He shook his head.
"They know I don't have anywhere to go."
"I wonder if we could have made it to that one," she said, "if we had run for it, instead of jumping off a cliff."
"Maybe," he said. "They usually keep it manned in case I try to make a run for it. But maybe."
"I don't suppose you can sing us up another one?" He chuckled.
"Why'd you come back, Elith?"
"I already told you."
"You once told me that if it ever came down to escaping together or alone, you wouldn't hesitate to leave me behind. But if you had a ship capable of taking us away from here, I assume you could have escaped without me. And yet, here we are."
"I guess I got confused."
"About what?"
"About what was and what could be." They sat together quietly for a few moments, the forest eerily silent behind and around them. Nature always seemed to have a way of knowing what was coming.
"Maybe we still have some time," Elith said.
But as she was saying it, she knew it was too late. She could feel it, like static building in the air before a lightning strike. The hair on her arms and back of her neck stood straight. It was happening now, in that moment, miles above the surface of Quell. In her mind's eye, she could see that gathering power, the great and terrible accumulation of energy. As the Hezra's Herald-class ships aligned and trained their weapons on a single focal point.
"Guess not," Eth Amuin said. She didn't know how long they had.
10 minutes? 60?
It didn't seem to matter now.
In fact, very little did. A strange sort of peace settled over her then, an acceptance of her fate, and perhaps relief that she would not have to witness whatever would follow. Her failure to put Quell down seemed small in that moment. The political games of the Hezra, the Grand Council, and even her once beloved First House seemed smaller still. Behind her, Eth Amuin got to his feet, wiped his hands on his pants, and then walked closer to her.
"I'm going to try something," he said, reaching down to her. "Would you help me?"
"I'm not much of a dancer," she said, and he smiled at that, broad and genuine.
"That's okay. I can teach you."
She allowed him to help her up, and then followed him farther out into the clearing. He looked up into the late afternoon sky. It was already deepening its blue, and large clouds had gathered, obscuring the sun. Elith looked up too.
"You're going to try to stop it," she said.
He shrugged.
"Maybe I can turn it," he said after a moment. "If I can focus on that, and that alone. But I won't be able to hold the planet together. It's too much, too many pieces, too many connections. I can't keep it all together in my mind."
She chuckled. It never would have occurred to her to try to resist the awful power of the contingency. But keeping track of the intricate network of relationships that made a planet what it was? That was certainly something she could do.
"Okay," she said. "I'll hold the planet together. You prevent the cosmic blast of annihilation from hitting us. Maybe it'll be easier than it sounds."
"Sounds like a plan."
"You don't seem like much of a planner.
That's why I have you."
Somewhere in the heavens, the terrible energy continued to grow like a black hole tearing a galaxy apart. And though she didn't know what she was doing, or really even why, Elith began to work through the many steps of revealing the Silent Gate. But now, instead of describing the collapse and death of all the vital currents that sustained Quell, she spoke of its life and its strengths, its resilience, its unique pathways and history. She told the planet of its origin and how, against impossible odds, it had emerged from darkness to become something marvelous and wonderful to behold. She spoke of the life it had embraced on its surface and within itself. And as she spoke these things, images began to flood her mind. Images of her time on the world, Hawk and his good-hearted crew of roughnecks, the delicate petals of Fairy Queen growing in the mountains, the woman who had inadvertently rescued her in Haravan, and her little daughter Haike, the desk sergeant who longed for a reconciled relationship with his son, Birnan and his radical generosity. With each image, she felt a swelling in her chest, a growing tide of emotion that threatened to steal her mind from the work at hand. And instead of suppressing the memories, she drew upon them, used them to influence her words. In her broken and exhausted state, she knew it was too much. The yawning, churning abyss of chaotic potential called to her. It strove to fill her mind not with darkness, but rather with magnificent color too varied and complex to process. A fractal rainbow of rainbows, a primordial nothingness that contained everything that ever was and would ever be. She was stepping once more into the infinite expanse of the cosmos. Already, she could feel her feet slipping beneath her. But that too now was no matter. She knew she would lose herself in this. Whether Quell was destroyed, or by some impossible means, Eth Amuin managed to turn back this wave of destruction, Elith, advocate of the voice, would not reemerge. But before she could give herself over, before she allowed herself to be swept utterly away, she would play her part. She closed her eyes and turned her mind from that glorious annihilation, and instead forced herself to picture the fleet hanging there above them in space, the legion glittering ships of judgment. Elith had witnessed them before, knew their formation, and in their midst, she knew 20 Herald-class vessels lay aligned to form a corridor through which Quell's bright ruin would pass. She fixed the image in her mind, the ships in their orbit, Quell, their focal point. And as she held the vision, far above the planet's surface, she felt the release, a sudden rush like the heat of a sunray piercing an overcast sky, and doom rode upon that light. In an instant, Eth Amuin was crying out, somewhere out there, but quickly he faded away. Elith could no longer hear him, see him, sense him. Just as the heralds focused their terrible energy on the planet, so too Elith bent her entire will to Quell and its many rivers, its mountains, its trees, its segmented sky. She spoke to it, reminded it of all that it was, all that it could be. But the ray of power was too great. It pierced her, passed through her, deep into the core of the planet. She could feel the world coming apart beneath her, around her, within her. In her desperation, Elith became Quell, and the planet became her. They were one and the same, and the sundering of the world was the dissolution of herself. But the power was overwhelming, the destruction too widespread. Whenever she turned her focus to hold one part together, some other threadline burst, or water course broke free. No matter how forcefully she spoke, no matter how perfectly formed her phrases, she simply could not keep pace with the rending of the planet. And she was sliding, sliding inexorably toward the great expanse. It was then that she abandoned herself fully, that she stopped struggling against the pull, stopped guarding the limit where self met no self. And as she spoke, almost without consciousness, Elith began moving, amplifying her declarations through her body, and her body seemed to know exactly what to do, without any effort or exertion of will. Arrow seeks the heart. Warrior summits the mountain. Titan bears the world. The stances came to her faster, stronger, and soon she was weaving them together with new ones she'd never before experienced, transitioning from one to the next without a moment's thought, simply reacting and responding to the chaos unfolding around her. From that chaos, she drew order. Still, she could envision Quell, surrounded by the mighty fleet, in such vivid, impossible detail. It was as though she was no longer imagining it, but rather seeing it all with clear eyes. Time ceased its flow, and Elith swept her gaze over the planet and the fleet. Quell shimmered, its uppermost atmosphere, radiant with a thin white light. And the usual rigid formation of the Ascendant's ships stood fractured through the middle. The geometric alignment of the Herald-class vessels lay broken along one side, the mightiest of Hezra weapons shattered across the sky. And from that vision, Elith felt herself slipping further and further away. Somehow, her voice, her body, her mind, everything that made her who she was, seemed to expand and encompass more and more of the universe until she was merely an observer, and the self that had once been was no longer. This, then, was the complete and total dissolution, the fate of those who danced too close to the edge of all power. The last, final traces of the being that had once been Elith Kyriel, servant of the first house of the Ascendants, advocate of the voice, slipped away into nothingness and into the infinite, and was gone, and had never been. Until a voice called. Elith Anuel,
Eleth Anuel.
And that observer, though it was all things and nothing, heard the voice and the words it spoke. And out of the nothingness, something came forth, the barest hint of something that could sense a specific time and place.
Eleth Anuel,
the voice called. And Eleth recognized the voice, Eth Amuin, calling to her from a place beyond all perception and knowledge, or rather, calling her from it, back to the space she could inhabit. She was drawn to it, and soon she realized that she was no longer just observing, but was in fact a self again. Herself, again. And then she was a mind, and with that mind, she could perceive that she was not alone in the midst of that chaos. There was one standing with her, standing firm while all else swirled and raged about him. But in that great empty nothingness, or great fullness of all things, she saw the being standing before her, not as she had known him, not as Eth Amuin, but rather as his true self. All illusion stripped away, and only revelation remained. The first speaker, Varun Fedek. All that she had feared him to be, yet nothing like she had imagined.
Eleth Anuel, he called.
He was radiant, and his voice was the voice of all creation, and the maelstrom calmed at its sound. And then the mind that was Eleth added to it a spirit, and then a body, and the cosmos receded, and she was just one woman, fallen to her knees in a clearing, and the terrible trembling of all creation had ceased. She looked up then, and saw the spiraling arm of the galaxy, white against the deep blue of the nearly waned day, and she realized that what she saw couldn't be stars, and was instead some brilliant scar slashed across the sky. Somehow, there was still a sky, and she knew it contained the aftermath, the Ascendant's fleet, with a jagged hole torn through the middle of its power. As her thoughts restructured themselves, Eleth remembered she was not alone, and she turned her eyes back to the ground around her. Eth Amuin was lying 10 feet away from her, face down, utterly still. Just a man. And the vision of his true identity clashed with all she'd been told, his nature nothing like what she had been led to believe. She sat looking at him lying there, motionless, helpless, silent. Still, Eth Amuin. She tried to go to him and found she lacked the strength to stand, but she could crawl. Crawl she did, to his side, and she laid her hand upon his back. Grief, she said. Grief. He did not stir. She shook him then, called more loudly, Eth Amuin! Open your eyes and behold your work! Eth Amuin! Still he did not move, not even a shallow breath. Eleth leaned her head down and pressed her ear against his back, listening for a heartbeat or any sign of life, but she could detect none. She straightened up, sat back on her heels, brushed his hair away from his face. Varun, she said, come back! A hint of movement, a flicker of a smile. His eyes fluttered open a few moments later, and he drew a deep breath, as though it was the first he'd ever taken, and his lungs could never fill.
I think, he said, his voice raspy, you have me confused with someone else.
Eleth fell back to a seated position, too weak even to crouch. Eth Amuin, or Varun. Rolled over onto his back with great effort and lay in the dust, staring up.
You told me you were his disciple.
No. You said that, he said. I said I followed the thoughts of that man.
Is it true? She asked, knowing in her heart it was. Are you Varun Fedek?
I was, he answered, once.
And now?
Something new.
After a few moments, he raised a weak arm and waggled his hand vaguely at the white streak hanging in the heavens.
Did we do that?
No, she said. You did. I was too busy holding the world together.
then you did the important part.
He looked over at her and added,
I wonder which one that makes you.
What do you mean?
Spear or shield?
Elith chuckled and shook her head. Doing so made the ground swim beneath her, and she too laid back.
What happens now? He said.
I assume we're actually dead, she answered. And this is our surprising afterlife?
Can't be, he said. I feel too terrible.
Who said the afterlife was supposed to be pleasant?
Everyone who ever worked for it, I guess.
Elith smiled at that, though it hurt too much to do more.
If we're not dead, I imagine they'll come to take me home, she said. And you'll let them?
The question struck her, echoed through the fog of her depleted mind. She was still coming to terms with experiencing the present. She could scarcely imagine the possibility of a future, let alone what it may hold for her. Take me home, she had said. Was there any home for her now? What about you? She asked, deflecting. Where will you go? Eth Amuin returned his gaze to the sky, sighed heavily, considered for a time.
I'm at the end of myself, Elith, he finally answered. I see that now. I've gone as far as I can on my own. But I know I can yet be more. With help, with guidance.
What are you saying?
I want to learn as you have.
Elith shook her head.
First house would never take.
Not from them, Elith, he said, turning to look at her once more. I want to learn from you.
She heard the words, but it took a moment for their meaning to reach her.
He reacted to her hesitation, turned on his side to face her more completely.
Think of it, he continued. The two of us, free to explore the fullness of the deep language, together. You can teach me.
The image flickered through her mind. The two of them, hidden away on some other world, working together in secret. Her time on Quell had exposed the rot within the Ascendants. Here now was a chance to start something of their own, something powerful and from the outset truly rooted in the purity of the deep language. If she could teach him, what following might they build together? And if they built, what power could stand against them?
I've always found my own way, he said. I've never followed anyone else. But I will follow you, Elith. I will follow you, wherever you lead.
In that moment, paths unfolded themselves before her. He was offering himself into her hand, a weapon too mighty to wield. The strength of her desire to take hold of him served as a warning. Her wounding was deep and raw. Already the seeds of revenge sought to take root. But there was another way. To return to the first house, to present herself as she was, as the person she had become, to face the order directly, to submit and allow herself to be tested against whatever fate the Paragon had spun for her, to stand on her own. And she saw, too, how tightly Eth Amuin's fate was bound up in hers. Lying next to him, Elith couldn't deny the kinship she felt with him, the sense that he saw her for who she truly was and delighted in her. There was freedom in him, and the promise of a deep and fascinating relationship that could take a lifetime to fully explore. If she returned to the house, she would never see him again. Elith saw the choice starkly. The lines divided as sharply as Quell's night sky.
Will you let me? Eth Amuin asked.
The quiet hope in his voice seared her heart. Two choices. But she realized, to her pain, only one answer. They would never stop looking for me, Elith said. And I still have business with the house. And though her mind flooded with reasons and explanations, she spoke none of them, for fear that he would answer and reveal their hollowness. She kept her eyes on the sky above. After a long moment of silence, Eth Amuin rolled once more onto his back.
I think I'll go with you just the same, he said.
There's no telling what they'll do to you. There never is, Elith. And you know me. I've never been much of a planner. A strange peace blanketed Elith, now that her decision had been made. It strengthened her purpose, but not with fiery defiance or adamantine resolve. There was only a simple, quiet sense that whatever came next was good and right. Eth Amuin seemed to feel it too, though she couldn't help but test it. "If they don't kill you," she said, "they'll turn you back over to the Hezra, you know. Eventually, make you stand before the Hezra Ka himself." He took a deep, settling breath, then said, "What man, having mastered himself, should fear any king?" Elith found even breathing almost too much effort, but she couldn't let him have the final word. "What about snakes and spiders?"
"I never said I had completely mastered myself. But in time, perhaps. All things in time."
They lay together quietly after that, side by side, looking up as the first stars of twilight began to emerge, bright light shining from light. And for the first time in long years, Elith saw written there not a reminder of the dead, but rather the hope of something new. Epilogue. Elith stood alone in the Paragon's garden, waiting at last to receive whatever judgment awaited her. The last time she'd been brought to this place, she'd been full of questions and anxiety. Now, however, her mind was still, attentive to her surroundings, drinking in each moment as it occurred, and letting it pass into the next without concern or regret. She saw the miniature frost oak, and how it had grown to fill the gap her stroke had left. If she hadn't known where to look, she never would have noticed anything out of place. After the failure of the contingency, a collection team had extracted her from Quell, along with Eth Amuin, and though Elith had expected a confrontation with the Paragon immediately upon her return to the Vaunt, to her surprise, she'd instead been sent directly into the recovery cycle, as though nothing unusual had occurred. Nieta had once more kept watch, a service Elith discerned that the elder woman had requested. Though her deployment to Quell had been secret, there was no question that a distance had opened between her and her beloved sisters. And the change was not merely in her own mind. The advocates of the house might not have known the details, but news of Quell had surely filtered throughout the Order. It wouldn't take much to put the pieces together, or at least for the rumors to spread. Nieta had treated her with the usual stern care, but Elith had caught her lingering looks, a mix of sadness and wonder. No one in the house seemed to know what to make of her now. But all that was coming to an end. Her recovery period was over. The confrontation she had first anticipated was upon her. The door of the residence opened, and the Paragon came forth and stopped at the edge of the porch. She was dressed neither in formal regalia nor her simple work clothes, but rather the gray uniform of an instructor. "Elith," the Paragon said. Elith approached, stopped at the foot of the stairs, and bowed. "Paragon of the First House," she answered formally. "I presume you know why you've been summoned."
"I do not presume to know anything anymore," Elith answered.
"I ordered you to kill the planet Quell," the matriarch said, "and you failed in that duty."
Elith made no protest, no argument. None would be tolerated, and she felt no need to defend herself. The Paragon's next statement surprised her. "It was perhaps good that you did. You did not carry out my direct command. But in one sense, at least, you did not fail in the mission I sent you to accomplish. Quell is stable. Though what that means now, we do not know. Perhaps the fault lies with me for failing to understand the full array of options before us." The Paragon's words and tone threw Elith completely off. Her manner was solemn, devoid of all warmth, and yet she seemed, in some strange way, to be complimenting Elith for finding a way to render the threat harmless. The formality soon vanished, and the Paragon descended a step and sat on the porch. In doing so, she brought herself down level with Elith and looked intently for a time into Elith's eyes, searching. Elith held herself still and calm, allowed the gaze to probe her inner being. That once terrible gaze seemed somehow diminished now, its reach and ability to penetrate blunted. "It is strange to have you here among us now, daughter," the Paragon finally said. It was a subtle admission, confirmation of what Elith had long since come to suspect, a truth she had acknowledged, but which until now had remained unspoken. "You never intended for me to return to the Vaunt," Elith answered. The Paragon smiled sadly, "and you must feel deeply betrayed." "I did," Elith confessed, "after. But now that betrayal seems small." "Small?" the Paragon said with a chuckle. "Even now you are gracious beyond all reason to your house and your old mother." Elith hadn't meant small in the sense that the Paragon had taken it, but she didn't correct the misunderstanding. The betrayal had been complete. It had opened a rift between them that Elith was not sure could ever be spanned. But within the context of all she had learned, of all she had seen, it seemed petty by comparison. The games of power and influence between the First House and the Hezra, in which Elith was a pawn, seemed to her now to be misguided and almost shamefully narrow-minded. "But resentment would be the expected response, dear," the Paragon continued. "The only natural one, in fact. Surely you feel it."
"It is the need for the deception that I don't understand," Elith said. "If you had told me at the start that it was a suicide mission, I would have done no less for the house."
"I believe you," the elder woman said, "or at least I am certain you believe you would have. It is one thing, however, to ask someone to give their life in service to a greater cause. It is something different entirely to ask them to suffer intensely for an unknown period of time, and to continue to strive in the midst of suffering, knowing the ultimate outcome is death. Another miscalculation on my part, perhaps. I believed you would carry out the decree, and in doing so would be absorbed and lost to the infinite. We all did. It seemed the most gentle and gracious way to quell the danger."
The final question that lingered in Elith's mind was answered. It had all begun with her recall from Revic, a message sent after she had already begun the irreversible work. That, too, had been no accident. The first false lead to send her on her way. The urgency of the recall had served as the pretext for her truncated recovery time. The lack of recovery had been intended to guarantee her dissolution when she carried out the judgment of Quell. "I see wisdom within it," Elith admitted. An advocate of the voice corrupted by the strain would be an unpredictable threat. Resistant, perhaps, even to the combined might of the House and the Hezra. "Perhaps," the Paragon answered. The glint in her eye showed that she had not missed the mild challenge in Elith's response.
"But do not allow yourself to believe it did not wound me, my bright daughter. When I told you I was giving the best the House had to offer, I meant it.
And yet, you commanded me with a binding phrase." The Paragon's eyes widened almost imperceptibly at Elith's words, the first genuine display of surprise Elith had ever witnessed in the woman. Shock at Elith's ability to discern the truth of what it meant to be called guided by the true star. A moment later, a thin smile stretched the matriarch's lips. "It was not meant to bind you, child. It was intended to insulate you from the effects of the strain. A defense to keep you to your purpose. It was the only solution we could foresee. But it would appear that not all solutions can be foreseen, even by the wisest among us. Indeed, it would seem those same minds cannot help but underestimate you. Which brings us to the ultimate matter."
"My expulsion from the Order of the Voice," Elith said. The Paragon nodded. "With your true identity known to the Hezra,
Of course the house will protect you, my dear, but going forward I fear your service would be substantially limited. And I know it would be difficult for you to leave the order, the Paragon continued. I won't insist upon it. I'm sure a place could be made for you, perhaps as an instructor or something of the sort, if you would choose that way. But you are young yet, with much still to offer, and I believe you would find those responsibilities too burdensome, too confining.
I had not expected the house to offer any choice in my fate. The Paragon leaned forward. There are many paths open to you, Elith. Many before us all. The old game has been wiped away. Though few see it, the foundation of the Ascendance has shaken, and our place within it is uncertain now that the Hezra has regained much of its former glory. We have much work ahead. Given her lengthy isolation, Elith had expected some surprises, but the thought had never crossed her mind that the Hezra might benefit from the near calamity for which it had been responsible. Gained glory, she said. For redeeming Quell, the Paragon answered. I don't understand. The Paragon sat back with a gentle, patient smile. The official history reflects how the hierarchy developed a new protocol in secret. One meant to replace the contingency. And Quell was its first true test, kept hidden in case it failed. But because of its success, now revealed to the Ascendants at large in glorious display, the losses they suffered granted all an aura of heroic sacrifice that only bolsters the reputation. Losses? Of the 20 heralds they sent, only 8 returned. Elith recalled the vision she'd had when she and Eth Amuin had stood against the power of that fleet, the ships in orbit, broken, not just a vision after all. For the good of the Ascendants, the Hezra bore the dishonor of the first Markovian strain, the Paragon continued. Now that is repaid. But why? How could you allow it? Concessions had to be made to bring you home, my daughter. Despite Elith's emotional distance, the weight of that revelation settled on her shoulders. There was no knowing what else her relative freedom had cost the First House. And, she asked, keeping her words carefully neutral, what of Eth Amuin? Hidden away in some Hezra hole, the Paragon replied, watching intently to gauge Elith's reaction. Elith felt many things. Joy that he was still alive. Fear for the treatment he must have even now been enduring. An unexpected reflexive desire to rescue him. But all of these feelings she kept buried in her heart. After a few moments, the Paragon added, and watched over by our own hand. A strange alliance, certainly, but in giving concessions we also extracted them. In time enough, we'll unlock his secrets. I suspect there is a great deal more we can learn, particularly with your insights. The Paragon shifted her posture once more, straightening while remaining seated on the porch. It gave her an air of authority, even in its informality. Certainly you have your detractors, she continued, those who believe it was a mistake for us to receive you back into the house. But you are not without supporters. Few know the truth, of course, as is so often the case in our matters. And though I believe we could find a place for you to remain within the voice, if that is your desire, I had hoped that perhaps you might consider becoming an advocate of the mind, that you might come and serve directly under me, or rather, alongside me. In all her imagining, this was one possibility that Elith had never conceived, that she might be elevated to the highest level within the First House to stand beside the Paragon herself, among her scant handful of advisors and counselors, a height from which she would have not only direct involvement and influence over the future of the house, but would also gain a voice to shape the vision of the Ascendance itself. And in a spark of insight, she saw as well how within such company the greatest advocates the house had produced would keep her close and controlled. Elith smiled to herself. Here, then, was the promise of a golden prison. You're right. It would be difficult to leave the voice, Elith said, but leaving is something I've considered deeply during my recovery. I believe it may be the best thing for everyone, in fact. The Paragon smiled.
Then you'll come and serve by my side.
There is perhaps no greater honor the House can offer, Elith said, but I cannot accept it.
The Paragon sat back. You see another path? She said.
Yes, Elith said. She had made her decision long ago. Now she would face the test. I choose to renounce my vows and leave the service of the First House. The Paragon made no attempt to hide her shock now. For a brief time, she was rendered truly speechless.
Elith, my bright daughter, she said, shaking her head. If you renounce, then you will be exiled from the Vaunt, from all its holdings, now and any established in the future. The House would forevermore be closed to you. You will be beyond any protection your sisters can offer you from the Hezra. They will be watching you everywhere, always, and if they believe they can take you, they will not hesitate to do so.
I know all these things, but this is my path. I choose to walk it.
The Paragon regarded her closely for a long moment.
Perhaps in time I could come to allow it, she said, but not yet. It would not be wise for you, or for our house. It is clear to me that we each have something more to teach the other.
It should have been another startling admission, the idea that Elith might have anything to offer the exalted matriarch of the First House. But Elith knew it was true, at least partially. There may be lessons I could teach you, Elith said, but there's nothing more I can learn at your feet.
The Paragon reacted, stung by the comment. An ancient fire rose in her eyes then, and she shot to her feet with startling speed.
Elith Kyriel, she cried. You are a sworn servant of the First House, bound by oath to it and to me.
As the Paragon spoke, she seemed to grow in every direction, and her words stole the air and the light. Elith had faced the cosmos in its immolating expansiveness. Here now she confronted it, personified. All of creation, and all that might have ever been created, compressed into the point of a blade aimed at her heart. No matter how strong her will, her body could never withstand such focused power. She felt herself folding under its fury. But even as she bent forward, bowing to that irresistible authority, she swept her arms out like a falcon, soaring, and it was as though the planet itself rose up to share the burden. The great hand that crushed her from above became water, flowed around and past her. Elith straightened and met the Paragon's gaze. And though there was terror in the violence of the matriarch's raw power, it too seemed to flow past Elith without being able to touch her.
Bend your knee, the Paragon cried.
Elith took the full force of the words, felt it wash through her like the shock wave of a dying star. In the midst of that raging torrent, she found her own voice, still and quiet, and with it she spoke. There is no power left by which you may command me. At those words, the Paragon fell back and sat heavily upon the porch, astonished. The great power dissipated, light and air returned, and once more she was merely an old woman in her garden. And Elith knew then, without a doubt, that while the First House had been built on a measure of truth, there was a deeper, fuller truth upon which she now stood.
I have something for you, she said, taking a small cloth-bound bundle from her pocket.
She regarded it for a moment, knowing the work that lay within and how carefully she had crafted it during her time in isolation. But then she held it out to the Paragon, laid across both hands as an offering held up before an ancient power.
I thought perhaps it could find a home here.
The Paragon received it with cautious curiosity, placed it on her lap while she gently uncovered what lay within. At first, she was puzzled by what she saw. But then recognition came, and the Paragon's face turned grave. She held it up and looked to Elith with fear and wonder in her eyes. The frost oak cutting. Remarkably changed. The partial break in the middle had been replaced by a small knot, a smooth-barked scar covering the old wound. Teardrop leaves grew along the cutting, bright green, touched by the blue-white at the edges that had earned the tree its name. And where once a clean diagonal cut had separated it from its source, now thin tendrils splayed out, delicate and tender, seeking out new life. What Eth Amuin had begun, she had continued. "A memento," Elith said. The Paragon set the cutting aside, apparently at a loss over what else to do.
"If renunciation is your true decision."
"It is," Elith said.
"Then hold out your hands."
Elith did as she was instructed, presenting her hands palm up, as though to receive some great gift. The Paragon stood, and that great ancient power asserted itself once more. Fearsome, awesome even now, despite its recent chastisement.
"Elith Kiriel," the Paragon said, "servant of the First House of the Ascendants, advocate of the Voice, by the power of your own declaration, you are thus expelled from the Order, exiled from the Vaunt, and henceforth banished from the House. I call you storm-driven, chaser of winds, a wandering star in the deep. You bear our name no longer."
With the final proclamation, the intricate markings on Elith's palms and forearms glowed once more with their starlight. Slowly, the brilliant silver-blue darkened, then changed, and burned ember-red as the figures and designs withered and faded. Everything Elith had ever been in the house vanished with them into nothingness.
"Thank you, Paragon," Elith said, bowing respectfully. "But my name is Elith Annuel."
Elith turned and left the garden then, and took her last walk across the grounds of the Vaunt, breathing its garden sweet air, feeling its golden warmth and serenity. And though she knew that once she crossed outside its bounds, she would be leaving behind all she had ever been and all she had worked to become, that thought seemed somehow no longer frightening or sad. To her own surprise, she realized she felt something she had not anticipated. Free. She was Elith Annuel. Now she would make her own way.
Every Sky a Grave, Ascendant Series Book 1, was written by Jay Posey and read by Laurel Lefko. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Every Sky a Grave, Ascendant Series Book 1, is available in print from Skybound Books.